All right, welcome back, everybody. Taxation is Theft. And I have with me today Anthony Cristo, who is running for U.S. Congress. How's it going?
Pretty good, Dan. How are you?
Awesome, pretty good. So tell me, how's the race going so far?
You know, it's going about what I expected, which is good and bad. Good in the fact that I'm making progress by reaching out directly to the people. Bad in that, you know, it's not getting the funding I need, but that's the way I like it, actually. It shows that I'm not getting special interest groups money. I'm not getting corporate funding for my campaign. I legitimately am doing this because I want to help the people and not the political party I'm running for or the corporations that are funding my campaign.
Nice. Yeah, it's so I ran for Texas House a couple years ago, and it's it was funny. I looked at the guy I was running against, and like all his money was coming from like police unions and like an apartment building, some builder company. And yeah, it's like when you, like we hear about like, you know, candidates being bought out by people, but when you can actually look at like their budget sheets and where their donations are coming from, it's kind of like, oh, well, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Compare their voting records and everything else. So awesome. Is this your first time running?
It is my first time running. Basically, in 2016, I literally looked at all the candidates and just like, how much worse does it have to get before people start voting third party? And in my district in particular, a Democrat has controlled it since the beginning. There has never been anyone other than a Democrat holding office there. And not that they've been bad, just they've kind of gotten accustomed and comfortable with the fact that they're merely just handing over the reins to the next Democrat in line. Looking at that, though, I said, that's not right. It shouldn't be allowed for any party to have that control over a district. So if anything, I want to make enough of an impact to make them realize we don't care how much money you're getting. We don't care how much money you're spending on your campaign. People want to see results, and I'm giving them that option.
Nice. So why do you think it is that they keep getting elected? What is it in your district that's like, what are the Democrats offering your district?
Honestly, I really, after going down there and talking with people, it's just a force of habit. It's something that they've done for years. Their parents did before them. Their grandparents did before them. So it's kind of ingratiated in their mind that the Democrats are who we vote for. But as I start talking to them, as I start bringing up the issues that they're neglecting, like pro-cannabis is one that they're often overlooking, they start listening to me instead. And I said, you know, I'm willing to work with anyone, Republican, Democrat, Independent, other Libertarian, Green Party, whoever. As long as they're doing something right, I'm going to help support them. If they're doing something wrong, I don't care how much money their campaign gave you, I'm not going to support it, plain and simple.
Nice. Yeah, it's and I saw you've actually been pretty active. Like I saw you were out at the beach with Corey at one of his events. I don't know how long. I'm going to one of his events. I don't know if you're going to this one. It's I think it's a week from this weekend, so about a week and a half away.
Manifest.
Yeah, and I don't know how many events he has on the beach there. he's just a beach bum, I guess. But yeah, it's pretty awesome. So you've been doing a lot of events and actually getting out and meeting people and you know, I heard what you had to say and it's pretty good. So I think you're
It's basically, you know, a lot of people think pro cannabis people who support pro cannabis, that they're a bunch of potheads. And I actually have put this out to anyone, challenger or otherwise, you can drug test me at the drop of a hat. I am 100% clean and I will remain clean, you know, during this whole campaign. Not to say that I've never tried it, because unlike Bill Clinton, I did inhale, and I think I'm still holding it in. But all joking aside, though, I'm not going to lie about my past. I'm not going to put on airs about myself. I'm going to be straight up and honest. I think it should be legal, especially coming from a veteran standpoint. There's a lot of my fellow veterans that are using cannabis to deal with post-traumatic stress disorder. They're using it to deal with pain management. They're using it to deal with seizures that they've suffered because of traumatic brain injuries in combat. These are all things that veterans are using cannabis for. Now, even the VA knows they're using it because on the bottles that we get on our prescriptions, it says, warning, may cause drowsiness. Alcohol and marijuana use may enhance these effects. So the simple fact that the VA is acknowledging that marijuana use can enhance these side effects knows that, they know that veterans are using it. The thing is, though, is as long as it's federally illegal, even in states like Colorado, California, Alaska, Washington, where it is legal, both recreationally and medicinally, if a veteran gets drug tested at work and they test positive for THC, they lose their job. And we do not want veterans losing their job, plain and simple. We don't want anyone losing their job for imbibing on a plant. But I think usually it appeals more to people's senses when they realize that there are veterans using this and that
Right.
they really depend on it.
Yeah, not just the couch potatoes sitting eating Cheetos all day. Yeah, and that's really interesting. I was thinking about that today. You have like alcohol is legal, but if you show up to work drunk, you're still gonna get fired. If you're driving drunk, you're still gonna get arrested or you're still gonna crash your car. These consequences aren't going away just because something becomes legal. It really is, if that's something that you do outside of work, off the road, like it really shouldn't concern anybody, especially if it's providing a medicinal benefit, which like that's another big thing. Like a lot of the conspiracy nuts are into, they post this it's this patent that the, and it's a fact. The US holds a patent on the medicinal benefits of marijuana, and at the same time they have it classified as Schedule One, which has no medicinal benefit. And it's like what's going on here? It's man, and I don't know how close the FDA works with the DEA, but what I've been reading about the FDA and how ridiculous. So here, this, I've probably said this on the show a million times, but you know about aspirin, right? They say if you take like a tenth of aspirin every day, it'll reduce your chance of a heart attack by like 80% or something ridiculous. The problem is everybody makes aspirin and it's not patentable, so nobody wants to spend the $50 million that it takes to be able to write prevents heart attacks on the label. So a doctor can't tell you that, because it's not approved, and the manufacturers can't tell you that because it's not approved. And so, if you think about marijuana, anybody can grow it. Who's going to be the idiot to put up the $50 million to get it FDA approved so a doctor can actually tell you that it does something? There's a lot more to this. Once we get it legalized, we still gotta fight with the FDA to get them to recognize the medicinal properties too. But that's a whole other topic right there. So what's how long have you considered yourself a libertarian?
Pretty much since 2000 and 2010. After the 2008 presidential election, I was actually voting for some libertarians, and my voting pattern had always been, who do I think is the best candidate? Not necessarily party. And the more I started looking at the candidates and genuinely looking at at what they stand for, I started realizing around 2010 that, yeah, most of my views are libertarian. I definitely am tired of having too much federal government preventing people from doing things that should be inherently free. And there's a lot of things, and of course, your taxation of theft thing is nail on the head because a lot of that tax money doesn't even need to be collected. A lot of if we got rid of 90% of those programs, then yeah, we wouldn't be taxed to death. We would be able to have our own money. And I like it when people ask me, well, if you cut out welfare, if you cut out food stamps, how are those people who are going to survive? Who's going to take care of them? And I look them straight in the eye and said, I will. I don't mind giving my own money to help people. But what I do mind is the government taking money from me and putting it in programs that are mostly run ineffectively. There are charities and other things, and myself, I think I could disseminate my money and how it's spent in helping people better than the government. And I think we've seen that time and time again. whenever the government steps in to try to meddle with things and get things fixed, they usually mess it up even worse. And that's why, I really think getting rid of a lot of these programs and relying it solely on the benefit of each other, and someone who's looking at this now and saying is like, oh well, this government's supposed to help people, and it's like, well, then you're really not following the money, because believe it or not, the Walton family, who owns Walmart, are the biggest beneficiaries of the welfare state. And people are shocked when I say that. No, they're not. They're billionaires. I'm saying exactly right. Because let's put it this way. They pay their employees a less than livable wage. Or they have them on a livable wage, but they don't give them livable hours to live on that wage. So what do? They have to go on government assistance. They get food stamps. They get Medicare, Medicaid to buy their prescriptions. Well, they're already at work. Where are they going to spend these food stamps? Where are they going to spend get their prescription filled? At work. So not only are the Walton family getting the money directly by being paid to it, but they're basically being rewarded for paying their employees less than livable wages. And so
Wow.
it's just a perpetuating thing where the Walton family keeps getting billions and billions of dollars every year from our tax money. And people say, well, it's helping people in need. Yes, but ultimately that's where the money's going, to
Yeah.
some rich family that really doesn't need it.
That's an interesting way to look at it. And I always bring this one up in, I think it was New Hampshire. They had, they had the state welfare program where they would give, food stamps and rent money and all these other things. And what they did is they said, instead of the drug testing, because that one turned out to be completely ineffective, they said, if you're able to work, then you do community service and then you still get your government benefits. And basically everyone said, well, if I'm going to be working, then I might as well go get a real job that pays real money. And they all, like 80% of the program, of the participants in the program dropped off. So you're exactly right. And then not only that, I actually tell a lot of libertarians, stop worrying about welfare because, whenever we say, yeah, we need to cut the welfare programs, it sounds like we don't care about the poor, which is not true at all. But the reality is that the government spends so much more money on corporate subsidies than they do on individual welfare anyway, that it's really irrelevant. Like we should be attacking all the free money that they're giving out to like the oil companies and the banks and all these other guys. These are the real, like that's the real welfare that's really burning a hole in our pockets.
Yes, corporate welfare is, to me, it's a no-brainer, but some people don't realize how much, like you said, money is going to subsidize oil companies, how much money is going to subsidize these corporations like the banks, because they say, well, they can't fail. And it's like, who says they can't fail? Isn't that what a free market's supposed to do? Weed out the ones who are mismanaged and misappropriating of funds, and then let the ones who are managed correctly prosper. That's the way it should be. Survival of the fittest, and capitalism in its true form lets those big corporations fail. They don't have government bailouts. They don't have your tax money going to some other guy, some bank where their CEO is making $300 million a year and their board members are collecting their $20 million a year bonuses. And that's the first place that money goes to, is those guys who basically ran the company into the ground. They make sure that they get their million-dollar bonuses. They make sure that they get their stock options. And then the people who actually, like the bank tellers and the people who are processing loans and whatever, they're an afterthought. They're not even looked upon. So to me, it's corporate welfare is one of the biggest travesties that our country has allowed to get.
Yeah, and that's a funny one because I always point out how when the banks failed in 2008, it wasn't even the banks really failing as much as it was the FDIC failing because from the bank's perspective, all of their risky investments were insured. And so, this if you look at the balance sheet of the FDIC, you'll see right after 2008 when everything started going south, they were actually short $700 million or $700 billion, whatever it was, and that's the same number of the bailout that they had to come up with, like ASAP, And it's like, oh, so if you follow the money, it didn't go to the banks. It went to the FDIC, which obviously had obligation to the banks. But what's really funny about that, that you just kind of pointed out, is, or kind of in the way of thinking of like your Walmart analogy, is so when you buy insurance, right, you do a risky behavior, and the insurance company looks at that and says, okay, well, you have this, you know, this much potential risk. This is how much it could potentially cost us, and this is what we're going to charge you. The riskier the behavior, the more they charge you. With the FDIC, you have an extremely risky behavior. Right now, the balance sheet is something like, you know, the FDIC has like $80 billion in their banks, but they're insuring $17 trillion worth of deposits. So it takes like, you know, a hundredth of a percent of the banks to fail before the FDIC needs another bailout. And what they're doing is these banks are paying, you know, they're paying for this insurance every month, but they're paying such a low amount compared to like this huge amount of risk that they're taking with our money that they're telling us is safe, that the reality is when they do fail, they're not paying for their own insurance. They're like through their premiums. It's the government that's ultimately paying those premiums for them, because when the insurance company doesn't have the money, it comes out of our pocket.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's totally screwed up. So I got a couple comments coming in. Everyone's saying like, yeah, we should be able to choose where we put our own money. And yeah, that's that. You know, this goes exactly back to, you know, everything. This is why I'm always stuck on taxation as theft, because as much as I hate the drug war is funded by taxes. If you could cut off the taxes, they're not. I mean, they're literally sitting around like, okay, well, we have $500 billion trillion this month. How are we going to spend it? Let's come up with a new program. And they're always like, when you have money like that, you're going to find something to spend it on.
Well, to go on the drug war in particular, before all the legalization in various states went about, ultimately, the war on drugs was costing us $10 billion a year in law enforcement, court costs, everything, costing the taxpayers $10 billion a year on a war that they would never win. When it was finally legalized in Colorado and Washington, I was living in Colorado Springs back in 2014 through 2016. That first year alone, with the revenue that was saved on not fighting it and also legalizing it, every single person in the state of Colorado got a state income tax refund. That was the first time ever, because you're not wasting money on something that you can't win. Because just like with alcohol prohibition, as long as there's a demand, it's always going to be met. So it might as well be safe. It might as well be legal. It might as well be regulated. Because I went to the Jim Beam distillery back in April, and I could literally eat off the floor there. It's that clean. I mean, I have no qualms in saying that that place was immaculate. But then you look at the history outside of it. And during Prohibition from 1920 to 1933, when people were distilling liquor in swamps, they were distilling liquor in basements and attics and dark cell, you know, keeping it hushed. And sometimes those things exploded. Well, that same thing's going on now with like meth labs in someone's kitchen. If you legalize it, it's going to be in a clean, sterile environment. You're going to get a more quality product. You're going to know exactly what's on the label, because it's going to say there's this much THC, there's this much CBD in your product. And then that way you can buy and purchase sensibly and educated, rather than buying whatever's on the street and pray to God it's not laced with something. So to me, I think it makes so much more sense to just legalize marijuana for the sake of saving tax money enormously. And not just marijuana, but all recreational drugs, because like I said, as long as there is a demand, it's going to be met. And you might as well have, I'd rather see someone smoking meth. I'd rather not see anyone smoking meth, but it's their right. It's their body. They can do whatever they want. But if they're going to, I'd rather see it being made in a clean, sterile lab with someone who has a doctorate in pharmacology, who actually knows what they're doing, than some crackhead in their kitchen on their stove, risking the whole neighborhood and blowing the place up trying to make meth. So to me, it just makes more sense to legalize it.
And I want to talk about that for a minute, because what's interesting about meth is like that gets a really bad reputation for, you know, one of the worst drugs. But the reality is it's very, very chemically similar to What is it? Not Ritalin. One of those drugs that they give you for, like, I think ADD.
Adderall.
Which one?
Adderall.
Adderall. Yes. So it's chemically the same, and now people will say, oh, but it's one chemical off, and that can make a huge difference. Well, there have been all these other studies that say, no, like, actually, it has the exact same effects. It has the exact same tendencies to addiction and everything else. And the reality is that, and I think there was another article that just came out that said there actually is health benefit to taking meth. But the reality is, like, all these crazy stories you hear about, like, people just totally tweaked out and you know, going doing all this crazy stuff, breaking into houses, fighting, you know, where it's like 10 cops trying to take one of them down. This isn't just like, you know, one person doing a little bit of meth. This is abuse. And you see the exact same thing with alcohol. Now, of course, with marijuana, like, you know, the more you take, the less trouble you're going to get into, because the more glued to your couch you're going to be. But, you know, we see the same thing with alcohol. We see people, like, go way over the top with alcohol, and problems happen. But at the same time, we see millions of people drinking alcohol every single day, and they just don't overdo it, and there's no actual problem. And, you know, we have the same thing with meth, I think. You know, I know there's a lot of people doing it, and yeah, we see some crazy stories every once in a while, but it's not like we see 100 crazy stories every day, which is, you know, there's probably a lot more people than that doing it, for it to be such a booming business that it is right now. I guess the opioids is a little bit different story, because I guess that is
Oh yeah. Don't
that's
get me started on opioids.
yeah, but at the same time, that's kind of you know, that's one of the alternatives. Like, so some of that stuff is prescription medication that you know, people are taking because they don't have access to marijuana. A lot of it's even provided by the VA. So it's yeah, this again, it's, you know, people, I know there's a lot of people out there that, you know, especially like pot smokers, they're like, you got to try this. This is the strongest stuff you've ever had. And, you know, some people like to just drink and, like, you know, competitive drinking and all this other stuff. Nobody wants to, like, end up running down the railroad tracks naked against like running away from a train or something. Nobody wants that. They don't do drugs to get that messed up.
No.
It's you know, there's people usually make a decision before they start taking it. And you know, when government is tampering with the market and they're tampering with people's decisions and what's available, they kind of create that opportunity for this really crazy stuff to happen. So
Exactly.
it's pretty unfair for them to say, oh, look what drugs does, when it's their fault.
Well, and this is what I point out to people who say, well, I don't want a bunch of potheads and, you know, meth addicts going around. I said, well, let's look at, like you said, alcohol. There are people who use alcohol and there are people who abuse alcohol. There's a
Absolutely.
big difference. There's going to be people who will use marijuana. There will be people who abuse marijuana. And really, abusing marijuana, the only thing you're going to kill is a bag of Cheetos. Now, if you use cocaine, if you use meth, if you use heroin, whatever, you know, hallucinogens, if you use it, there's going to be people that can maintain control. And just like with alcohol, there's going to be people who can't maintain control. And this way, if you have it legalized, you don't have the stigma. And that's usually why a lot of people overindulge. Because when I was in high school, yes, the legal drinking age was 21, but was I following that? No. Were most of my friends following that? No. Was making it illegal for us to possess alcohols, to keeping it out of our hands? No. We were still drinking. And at that time, you know, from the time I was, you know, a teenager till I was 20, 21, you know, just before I turned 21, I always drank myself silly. Why? Because I knew I wasn't supposed to be doing it, and I didn't know when I was going to get it next. But as soon as I turned 21, my binge drinking stopped. There was no need to get plastered every weekend
Right.
because I could have a beer whenever. And the same principle applies to a lot of these people that are abusing these recreational drugs. Because it's illegal, they don't know when they're going to get their next fix. So they'll keep on doing it until they pass out, throw up, whatever, wind up in a hospital with an IV. And again, legalizing it would actually help reduce the stigma and make people not crave it so much to the point where they're going to go nuts over it.
You know, that's really interesting. So, like, with stigma, right? There was, so first of all, there was this study, I think it, I want to say it was with heroin, and they were trying to prove how it was addictive. And it was, you know, they had rats and they gave them heroin, and they proved, okay, rats are addicted to heroin. But then somebody came along, and this was like in the 60s or 70s, and said, I think there's something wrong with that study because the rats were isolated on their own. I don't know. Tell me if this sounds familiar to you. So then they did a different test where instead of putting the rats in isolation, giving them heroin, they put them like in a community with, you know, five or six other rats and gave them, you know, let them self-medicate with heroin. And it, I think it was like they put it in the water. So they had one water with heroin, one without, and the rats would decide whether they wanted heroin or not. When they were isolated, they wanted it. When they were with other rats, they wanted the regular water, and they were just happy running around playing with each other. And what's really interesting about that is, so first of all, that's a completely misleading study about the addictiveness of heroin that basically says that it has more to do with social factors and possibly depression that, you know, that makes someone want to use it. But once you put someone in this like stigma of, oh, you're a drug user, that creates isolation. So even though someone might not be in a physical cage, it creates that virtual social isolation that might create, you know, a tendency to abuse drugs more.
Yep. It's just like overeating. You know, you feel depressed and sad, so you eat, and you know, it makes you feel good temporarily, and then you start getting depressed because you're getting overweight, and so you eat a little bit more. It's the same self-perpetuating ideal. You know, it, like you said, if someone's stigmatized and people are avoiding them, they feel more isolated and alone, so they go back to what makes them feel good, and then it just keeps getting worse and worse. But if we remove that stigma, then there's no need to feel isolated and alone. You can be sociable, you can be, you know, with friends hanging out, and if it's socially acceptable, then great, then they're not having that stigma and they can still socialize.
Yep, absolutely. So I want to talk about, I saw on your feed, a car show or something. Are you a car guy?
Yeah. Actually, it's a lowrider car show coming up September 2nd in Weslaco. A big constituent of my population down in the Rio Grande Valley it's very much Latino, and Latinos love their lowriders. And, you know, being a second generation Mexican American, it's been a while since I've been to a lowrider show, but I appreciate it. And I know that they're more receptive to my message because, like I tell them, you know, I'm not holding a $10,000 a plate fundraising dinner for a bunch of rich people, because I know I look around and say, I'm going to be honest, you guys can't afford $10,000 a plate, can you? Like, no, I'm doing this for free. I'm reaching out to you for free because you are the ones I want to represent. You're the people that I want to represent, not the $10,000 a plate donors. And that's who usually you get when you elect someone who does those type of fundraisers. So usually I really enjoy listening to these people and hearing what their issues are. One lady in particular, her son suffers from chronic seizures from an unknown cause, and the only thing that helps him is THC oil. As soon as you put the drops in his mouth, they stop. But if you don't, his seizures can last anywhere up to 3.5 hours. Wow. Now, that's the issue of quality of life that I think needs to be addressed. And so long as we have marijuana illegal on a federal level, even if Texas makes it legal, she's still going to have that cautionary tales. Well, at any time, the Food and Drug Administration or the DEA can break down the doors of her medical marijuana place and shut it down. So, yep. You know, that's why on a federal level, you know, we need to make marijuana legal. And that's just one example. There's also some people that are veterans like myself. And they say that, yeah, my cousin got deported and he had served in the military. And I was like, well, how'd he get deported? It's like, well, he got caught with a dime bag. And since it's federally illegal, he did some jail time. Then he gets deported. And why was he getting the dime bag? Because he has PTSD and he uses that to cope. So this man has earned the right to be buried on U.S. soil, but for whatever reason, they feel he doesn't have the right to live on U.S. soil, even though he fought in Iraq, he fought in Afghanistan. And to me, that's things that need to be rectified immediately. And if we're going to do any great, you know, people talk about the wall, immigration, well, they shouldn't have been here illegally. They don't understand how difficult it is when to go legally, much less having been here illegally and then getting an application process started on that. the uphill battle is tremendous from anyone who came from south of the border, even though most of the people that come from south of the border aren't even Mexicans. They're coming from Guatemala, they're coming from San Salvador, they're coming from El Salvador, they're coming from Nicaragua, which we remember the
Cuba.
Contras. And anyone
Every
who walks 800 to 1200 miles is not going to take a look at some wall and say, "Oh, I guess I'll go back." They're going to find a way around it. It's not going to deter them. It may slow them down, but it's not going to deter them. They will get over. And this was something I learned actually last week from one of our Libertarian Party county meetings. One of our members, he used to live in Brownsville back in the 80s when the border was open. And I remember because when I was a kid, we used to cross the border into Matamoros. We get some stuff. We come back. All you had to do was flash your driver's license. Nothing. And this guy, he was a doctor, and he said when the border was open like that, yeah, there was people that were working in the United States, and then they went home to Mexico because it's cheaper to live there. But as soon as, and this is where the government steps in, they think, well, we want to stop these illegals from coming in. We're going to tighten the border. So these people who are going back and forth, what do? They decide to stay in America. So basically, the United States and their effort to keep illegal aliens out basically forced them to make a choice, either stay in Mexico or cross the border and stay there. So as long as that border is closed, they're going to choose to fight their way to get over here. But if it's open, yeah, they'll vacillate back and forth between their homeland where they can speak the same language, or in America, which again, with all these other things, just makes it a little bit more financially feasible to come here.
Yeah, that's a really interesting one. And there's I mean, man, the reality is all these fears and issues that people have with the border are like so unfound. I mean, they're founded on propaganda and that's it. Like I mean, every time I cross the border, like I see how many trucks are coming. Bringing stuff from Mexico, people don't realize how much of our food comes from Mexico, and that having a closed border makes our food. People complain so much about, how come when I saw a post yesterday, how come a Burger King meal costs $3, but if I want to go to the store and buy a head of lettuce and some tomatoes and everything else, it costs like $10. It's there's all this like crazy stuff going on, and whenever you try to tighten the border, like it's just like we saw prices go up with everything. Whenever there's a war in the Middle East, gas prices go up. Like all this stuff. Whenever there's a tariff with China, electronics are going to go up. There's just so much. And then I hear people complain, oh, I don't want to have to press one for English. This is America. Everything should just be English. Well, like I didn't even connect dots on this until I started spending a lot of time in Mexico, and I bought a battery for my computers, and I realized, like, for tech support it says call the 800 number that goes to the US because it's manufactured in the US. So basically they have press one for English because they're actually receiving calls from all over the world, which means that this American, whoa, my dogs are going crazy over here. This American-based company is actually bringing in money from foreign companies, and because of that, that's why they have to have press one for English. And it's like, oh, well, that so if you want to get rid of that, which is like the dumbest thing ever, like the dumb of all the things you could complain about, I don't want to have to press an extra button. If you get rid of that, you're basically going to cut off money that's going to come in from other countries to these American companies. You're killing American jobs by not wanting to press one. It's just all this, propaganda that people push with just bullshit, just so that they can get elected. Like, you can't get elected unless you're selling fear.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Yeah. So man, it's nuts.
Well, one thing I do like pointing out to people is that the United States is one of the few advanced economies in the world that does not have an official language. There really is no official, like Canada has English and French, Mexico, of course, has Spanish, Spain has Spanish, but we're the only country that doesn't have an official language. So really, under that caveat, they have to provide, any type of government document in a language. And California is a funny one because they have driving test in like 30 different languages, including Braille. Now, why a blind person would be taking a written driving test, I don't know, but it's California. You know, they try to accommodate everyone. And as far as like taking American jobs, when I was 11 and 12, I helped my uncle pick watermelons and squash in a couple of summers. That is some hard work. And that's not something I would want to do again voluntarily. But the thing is that there's a lot of kids that think they deserve $15 an hour for flipping a hamburger. Well, try going out in the sun with no air conditioning, wearing gloves from can see to can't see, and cutting out squash from a vine and throwing it in a wheelbarrow and going back. It's a lot of work and it doesn't get paid a lot, but those people are willing to do it. And there's even like a claim that in California, with all the illegals that have been deported, there's so many crops that are now going to go to waste because they have no one to pick them. And I was like, well, there's that too. And granted, there are instances like the Molly Tibbetts recently, where sadly she was killed by an illegal alien. But for every illegal alien murder that you can point out like that, I can point to at least 20 different veterans who served our country honorably, who got busted for a bag of weed and are now in Tijuana, Juarez, or some other city right along the border of the United States, just because they didn't go through the right process and pay for it.
Yeah. And I mean it's that's the funny thing with statistics. Like, they say statistics don't lie, but liars use statistics. I mean, so okay, so this one person was murdered, and yes, it's tragic, by an illegal immigrant. How many other murders were there even in that same city? How many murders are there every month in Detroit or a place like that? And yes, a lot of people are saying, "Oh yeah, we need to ban guns." People come up with solutions for all these things. They have, but it's an agenda. Like, no one ever says, "Oh yeah, we should stop, domestic abuse." I mean, there are, organizations that want to stop that, but none of the politicians are up there saying, "Oh, we need to fund these organizations. We need this government program that's going to stop domestic abuse," because that's not really something that sells. But if you're out there saying, "Yeah, it's the illegal immigrants," or it's the guns, whenever you say something like that, you get people emotionally attached, and then those are so all you got to do is you got to find, okay, one murder that happened with this brand of gun, and now we get to ban that, or one murder that happened by an illegal immigrant, or it's crazy that they'll just take these one or two little things and forget about the big picture because it
Well, and
doesn't matter.
that's the thing is I look at the whole picture holistically. And I try to see, okay, well, yes, he used this gun. Could he have used something else? Yes. And I always point out that, with my basic knowledge of chemistry, I could go into any school totally unarmed, go into the janitor's closet, and create enough mustard gas to wipe out a whole classroom. You really don't need a gun if you really want to inflict copious amounts of damage on people. And I'm not the only one who knows this. There's a lot of people that know the basic chemical formulas to create that stuff basically in a school. That being said, you have a lot of short-sighted people that say, well, this person used a gun, we must ban guns. This person was an illegal, we must ban illegals. And they look at this very myopic view of the world that this cause and effect needs to be dealt with when really there's more behind that cause. You need to look beyond just the immediate and see the whole picture wholly. And that's what a lot of people don't do. So whenever I come across adamant resentment or denial and get name called and everything else, I just tell people, it's like, well, I don't let the opinions of myopic individuals determine how I feel. And the inability of someone to see the intelligence of what I'm bringing across does not diminish its worth. Just because you don't see it doesn't mean it's not valuable. And so I tend to like downplay that. Of course, you're going to get the crowd. People go with the crowd and just like, well, no, that guy's making a fool of you. Da 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 da. It's like, well, he thinks he's making a fool of me. He's really making a fool of himself. But you agree with him, so of course, in your mind, he's making a fool of me. But like I said, there are more people that listen to reason. And when they finally take a step back and see it, they're like, yeah, I hate to admit it, but he's right. then, they kind of like start seeing things and like, well, if anything, I want them to at least plant that seed to make them think. Even if it doesn't, they don't get it right away. Months from now, weeks from now, they get it, then my work's done.
Definitely. Yeah, and I've noticed, like, I mean, so to a certain extent, some people do like to listen to reason, but I it seems like it almost seems like when they're in crowds, of, that's kind of when they're like, wait, so this one guy is telling me I'm wrong and he wants me to listen to reason, but I'm here with all of my friends and they all think like me. So, and you know what? I think I bet you that's probably, just some psychological, I don't want to be the one to like, I don't want, my crowd to think I'm turning my back on them and they're going to think I'm crazy for listening to this guy with a different opinion. And I'm actually sure there's a lot of that going on. So that's an interesting perspective to that.
Well, I always point out that, and I'm sure most libertarians can relate to this, but to my conservative friends, they think I'm a liberal, and to my liberal friends, they think I'm a conservative. And I'm like, no, I'm a libertarian. I just think people should be allowed to do what they want, and I don't think, government involvement and the economy is actually hurting more than it's helping anything. So, and then if I say something, that supports Trump, then, oh my God, you're a Trump supporter. It's like, no, I just agree with him that we should have term limits for, congressmen and senators. There should be no such thing as a career politician. Well, I agree with that too, but Trump said it, so I'm not going to like it. I'm like, okay, that's your prerogative, but
Yeah.
that's one of the few things I totally agree with him on.
Yeah, that's that goes back to the idolization. Like it's if you like people are idolizing politicians and so that means, whatever they say or do, they're going to want to agree with it. When the reality is you shouldn't really look at any person like that because you might agree with them on a few things, but there's going to be a few things you disagree with them on. And you might be able to say, okay, look, this is not my opinion, but you might be able to say, okay, I like 90% of what Trump does, so I'm going to vote for him. But for the 10% of what I don't like about him, I'm going to openly speak out against it. And and of course, there's going to be backlash from that because the Trump supporters, who might be mostly the group that you're in because you agree with 90%. They're going to think you're anti-Trump because of those, those little 10% of the things that you speak out against. Oh, you're not a real Trump supporter. And it's like nobody should be a Trump supporter. You should either support XYZ policies or you should be against XYZ policies, but you shouldn't be a Trump supporter because that locks you into as soon as he makes a bad decision, you have to back it up, and that's just stupid.
Yeah, there were things about Obama that I liked that he did, and there are some things I didn't like. And there's things that Trump's done that I like, and there's a lot of things that he's done that I don't like. The key is, though, is to look at them objectively. And right now, I think both Republicans and Democrats, they're so focused on their party and making the other look bad that they don't look at the good that the other party may be bringing about. This is the best example of that. Under Bush, if you're an illegal alien and you served in the military, you got a fast track to citizenship. That was a good thing. That's actually something I wholeheartedly support. Obama took office, he stopped that because he was downsizing the military, not because he was against Mexicans or whatever. He's just downsizing the military. So he stopped that program. Well, now that Trump's in office 8 years later and immigration's a big issue, the Democrats are bringing back the same program that Bush had under his administration, and the Republicans are balking at it. Why? Because it's not coming from them, it's coming from the Democrats.
Right.
So even though it was initially their idea, 12 years ago, because the Democrats are doing it and it'll make the Democrats look good, they're against it. And I'm like, who cares if the Democrats look good for bringing it up because dropped the ball? If it's going to help the people in the best way possible, then that's the right thing to do. Put your petty bickering, your partisan politics aside, and do what's best for the people, not for your party. And I think that's something that they both are guilty of.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly what happened with Obamacare. That was originally a Republican bill, and then they didn't get it passed. So then then Obama did it as a Democrat bill. It's, you know, it's really the same. It's yeah, it's with everything, man. It's insane. You know, for the same reason, for that same, you know, groupthink, we shouldn't be labeling bills as Democrat or Republican, and we shouldn't. But I guess, you know, as soon as you have one politician sponsoring it, then it's whatever their party is. It kind of becomes that.
Yeah. Well, I actually point out to a lot of people, because most people are unaware of how our Congress works. And right now, all you need is a simple majority to pass anything in Congress. Currently, right now, the Republicans have a majority in the House and the Senate, so they could basically pass whatever they want, and they could block whatever legislation they want. Now, if you switch it back to the Democrats, same thing happens. You know, they have a 51% control. They could pass whatever they want. They can block whatever they want. Now, you bring in the Libertarians, and they get 10% of the House. And then the Republicans get 45%. The Democrats have 45%. Who has the majority? No one.
Nobody.
And then that way, they're forced to write legislation that is going to be beneficial, that is going to be worded without these pork-bellied projects embedded in there to help the people. And ideally, you know, like you look at countries like England, which has, what, I think 12 different parties in Congress. That's the way it should be, because then your vote really does count. Instead of picking the lesser of two evils, you know, I would like to see the Libertarians get a strong foothold in Congress. And not just us, I would like to see the Green Party. Any party that's going to take away the power and balance it genuinely between the other two is going to help. And that's why whenever I go to the polls, and I started doing this in 2010, and one of my campaign manager actually brought it up, and yeah, I was thinking, I vote that way. I vote for whoever's Libertarian first, and then if there's no Libertarian on the bill, I vote for whoever the third party is, even if it's an independent. And then if, you know, if there's no third party, there's no Libertarian, I vote for whoever's not the incumbent, just so we can start rotating people out of office and getting some fresh ideas in. And that's really the key to helping our democracy genuinely work.
Yeah, that's interesting. And there's, I want to say it's Costa Rica that has, so here's kind of the problem, right? So right now everyone sees Democrat, Republican. And so if we tell them, okay, yeah, you know, this plan sounds great. If we get some Libertarians in there, then nobody has the majority. Then, you know, some people would be fine with that. I think some people would still say, well, you know, well, you know, I'm a Republican, so the Republicans can still have a majority, but they should take votes away from the Democrats, so at least the Democrats won't. You know, there's still going to be some people like that. But I think there are plenty of people who, you know, I mean, it's common knowledge that politicians are corrupt, right? So maybe we could get more people to go along with that. But the problem is, and the way I see it, and this is kind of why I think, you know, Congress always has such a low approval rating, but everybody keeps getting reelected, is because if you ask any voter, it's, you know, why? Well, tell me, why is Congress so bad? Oh, it's every single congressman is terrible except for the one that I elected. And so, yeah. So they continue to vote for that party or for that candidate. But what I was going to say about Costa Rica is, I'm not too familiar with it, but they have some kind of system that's like this, where whoever you vote for, throughout the entire country, somehow it works out in a way where if all of the votes were for, let's say, 10% for a Libertarian party, then that means 10% of those elected have to be Libertarians. So it's interesting because we had, you know, let's say for example, I don't know, Gary Johnson got like what, 5%. So yeah. let's say that's what it was for Congress too. That now nobody, you know, that's 5% across the entire country spread out on all these candidates. You know, not a single candidate is going to win like that, but if you were to say, okay, well, since they did get 5% of the vote, they should have 5% of the Congress, which would be what, there's like 430 30 of them, so
Or, yeah, 430
like
something. I forgot the exact.
20, that would be 20 libertarians in Congress, to basically say, hey, this, and that's 5%. So your example was 10%. This would be 5%. So, but that could still break it up to 40, what, 47, 48, and nobody still has a majority. So, that's an interesting way to do things too. But of course, if anyone were to say, yeah, that sounds like a better system, we should do it, of course you're gonna have, you've got the two parties in charge that one of them is always gonna have a majority, and neither one of them is gonna let that pass because, they don't want to give up the opportunity to have a majority. So it's interesting. But it's always games, man.
Well, and unfortunately, and George Carlin's been saying it, well, before he passed away, is that, basically the politicians that we voted for are bought and paid for before we even get to the electing booth. Speaking for myself and most libertarians, I mean, we're running bare bones campaigns out of our own pocket. I'm not getting any money from the NRA, but I support the Second Amendment. I'm not getting any money from, any other special interest groups. I just go off of what I believe and what I support. And, that's genuinely, that's coming from the heart and not because some corporation or special interest group's paying me to be pro this or anti that. I do what I think is best for the country. And actually, I welcome people who disagree with me. Talk to me. Let me know what you feel is wrong. Because even though I have these commitments, I know I'm not perfect. I'm willing to listen to hear. I want to hear your point of view. I want to hear why you feel that way and see, well, maybe there's some truth to this. Maybe I need to reevaluate myself. Maybe you need to reevaluate yourself. Either way, having an open dialogue is key to getting anything done. And as long as we, politicians put up that wall, it's like, oh, he's a Democrat, I'm not listening. Oh, he's a Republican, I'm not listening. Then they're not listening to each other. They're not hearing and finding the common ground. And I was very fortunate to have breakfast with Dr. Tim Wesley. He's my Republican opponent. Very, very nice man. I really do not have a negative thing to say about him. He's gold. He's very honest. The only thing negative I could say about him is that he's a Republican, and that's usually going to only appeal to people who are Democrats. And that brings me to one other thing. We talked about balancing of power. This last presidential election, I think it was like 40% of the people who are registered to vote didn't vote. If we can get that 40% to vote for a third party candidate, there you go. Then your vote does count. Then your vote is going to make a difference. And those are the people we want to get to the poll. We don't want, to just automatically, yes, we want some converts coming from the different parties. That would be great if they could see our point of view. But we needed to also reach out to the undecided voters, the ones that have basically gotten fed up with it and given up. We need to reassure them that there are other options besides those other two. And we're not only encouraging us to prosper, but other parties to prosper as well, because we think that's going to be the only genuine way you're going to bring about true liberty in our democracy.
Yep. So yeah, and it's what I see a lot is that when you like, I don't even go around saying I'm a libertarian because I think that's already kind of a turnoff for people. But just kind of like what you were saying, like I think if you talk to people and connect with them, and you build that connection and then start talking about policies, then they're more open to that conversation. And then when you say, oh yeah, and by the way, I'm a libertarian or independent or whatever it may be, that's when it kind of clicks, and they say, oh, so maybe I don't need this other old party that I'm with. And I, because that's the thing, and I tell this to all the candidates that I work with, don't go around putting libertarian on everything because you're basically telling Democrats and Republicans not to even bother talking to you, and you're kind of screwing yourself over that way. But yeah, it's like you said, it's tough because raising money is we're out here talking to people one on one, and you can only reach so many people that way, versus these other guys who they take $10 million from some somebody that's buying them out, and they've got ads all over TV. So it's, you know, it's really difficult to compete that way. But I am pretty hopeful with some of our candidates. They are finding really great ways, and, you know, just getting the word out there and you know, raising money. But so let's go back to your campaign for a second. Do you have website donations, volunteers, all that? What's the scoop on that?
Yeah, right now I have my campaign website, which is www.christoforcongress.com, and it's F-O-R, not the number four, christoforcongress.com. On there is a link to go to a PayPal account to make a donation. And I have been telling people, you know, hey, I'm 420 friendly. If you could donate just $4.20, that'll be great. And, you know, if I get 10 people to donate $4.20, hey, that's $42. That's a tank of gas to get down to the valley and start supporting my campaign. Ideally, I'd love to have a billboard down there, but you know what? I really like the personal touch that I'm doing. Also, I do have the Christo for Congress 2018 on Facebook. People can do that. My Twitter is Christo Dude, and usually you can actually, whenever I post something on my webpage, it goes back to my Twitter account and Facebook account. So that way it's both taken care of. But yeah, I do have a campaign manager, Darren Pollock, and treasurer Jason Urbanowski. But, you know, when you got a $200 campaign funds, it's kind of easy to have the treasury looked at. And all my campaign staff, they're volunteering the time. They're working stiffs like me, so they can only devote X amount of time to it without it totally affecting their lives. So any volunteers would help.
Awesome. All right. So I saw a couple comments coming in here. There are some people that are going to see you at the car show, I guess. If you're down and you're in the RGV, right?
I am actually living in Cibolo, but my district runs down to the Rio Grande Valley. And that's one of those gerrymandered districts that the Republicans did back in, I think, 2006, where they basically cut out little slices. And so my district extends almost 300 miles south, but it's worth the trip. Wow. You know, the people down there are great. And, you know, I love every one of them that I've met. And even people that don't agree with me 100%, we find common ground. And that's the key.
Awesome. Yeah. And it's, I lived down there in McAllen for maybe a year or two. So, I know we've got some followers from the RGV. So if you're, the car show's down there, right?
Yeah. In Weslaco. It's going right. Sunday, September 2nd.
So if you're down in the RGV, go check out the car show. And where can we find out some more information on where that is?
I'm going to post it on my Facebook page and campaign website on my upcoming campaign stops. So probably in about 30 minutes, you should see something, the exact location, date and time. I'm going to be wearing my lowrider valley clothes. I'll be wearing my Gallavetta and my patent leather shoes. So I'll definitely be lowridered out and maybe nice. Even wearing a sleeveless shirt to show off my tattoo. Because, I'll be a tattooed congressman if I'm elected.
Nice. Awesome. All right, cool. Well, it's been great talking with you, and hopefully you'll get some volunteers out of this. And exactly. Wink, 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 guys, go check out the page.
And remember, just $4.20, 420 to support a 420 candidate.
Absolutely. All right, man. What is taxation?
Theft.
All right. It's great talking with you, and we'll catch you later.
Take care, Daniel.